Okay.
I wanted to say one more thing about Florey, if there's time. It's just that, I thought it, what was remarkable was the way in his relatively later stages of his career, he suddenly embraced and really expanded upon the matrix algebra method of handling the partition functions of a chain in the rotational isomeric state model. Florey's mathematical training was probably less than mine. He had marvelous physical insight, but I would say in terms of, well, perhaps the meaningless phrase, mathematical elegance, he had not particularly distinguished himself that way. It was the combination of not too obscure mathematics for the reader with marvelous physical insight that characterized all his great works. But then when he got onto this conformational business, he saw the computer coming clearly too, that these methods were the way to go. And he not only taught himself how to at least read what Wolkenstein and several other people were doing at that time, but then really building and improving upon them and becoming the master of that thing. And he did this at a relatively late stage in his life. I mean, he was certainly past 50. A completely new area for him, and that's remarkable.
Right.
I want to mention that.
Well, I mean, his early death, it must have been quite a shock, I think. I mean, I remember I was in Akron at the time the news came out, and it was quite a surprise to hear that he had died.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my. Hard to believe.
And he hadn't had any, there was no sort of indication that he would have.
No indication. He was still hiking in the hills near his Big Sur place and now and then, and just in good health. He was still swimming, I believe. As you know, he was a very good swimmer.
Mm-hmm. Let's put an last topic on the tape. Let's move on briefly to your family, because you mentioned in the last transcript that you got married in 1938.
I did.
But that's all we've heard about your family.
Yeah.
You might like to say something.
Well, I
more.
Met my wife Sylvia through a colleague in the chemistry department. I was a grad student. He was a young postdoc, Clark Stevenson, but he introduced me to Sylvia, who knew some MIT people. She was working in Boston, actually, she was a fashion model for Jordan Marsh Company, one of the big stores in Boston, and we enjoyed each other's company quickly. So after a relatively few months, we were married, and she's still my wife, and it's now, well, what, 53 and a half years going on. Our children didn't come along for a few years, after 5 years and 7 years, I guess. I have two sons, neither of whom became a scientist.
Wow.
The older boy, very much more practical. He, after a hitch in the army which interrupted his college years, did get a degree in geography at Syracuse and then worked for the Mobil Oil Company. But what he is now is the distribution manager for the Fraunhofer Bakery in Albany, which now is owned by General Foods, which in turn is owned by Philip Morris. But he's been a successful businessman with three children, one of whom, his second daughter, is a junior at Yale and is, I think, a very bright person, with doing a major in mathematics with an economics minor. And I'm proud of her, amongst the others, but I'm proud of them all. And my younger son, Hugh, is a bookseller in Boston. Old books. He works in the Brattle Bookshop, of which he's the manager, along with the owner. He never finished college, but he never forgot anything he ever read. More or less a rebel. And I think he felt a tremendous burden to perhaps do something that his father would like. Mm-hmm. I never demanded either of these people should be scientists or anything like that. Hugh had, I think, quick understanding of mathematical concepts. I saw that from his schoolwork when we used to talk about it. And I would encourage him to beat hell, to go on with this. Well, he understood, but he wasn't sufficiently interested. He had a tremendous combination of, well, I'll call it pessimism and laziness for a while that reinforced each other. So it took him many years to find what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But he's, I think, very happy in it now.
Wow.
There are five grandchildren, four women and one male. Mm-hmm. The boy is about to enter college. He's the third child of my older boy. And that's about it. They live in one, the younger son's in Boston, the other one in Albany, so we see them reasonably frequently.
Right.
And the daughters-in-law, one of the older one is works for a book publisher as an editor, and the other one is a research assistant in Tufts Medical School. She's a marine biologist by training, but is working on a project on Alzheimer's now. So there's a slight science connection there.
Right.
But I have no idea what the next generation will do.
No. We'll be talking to find out. Okay, well, thank you very much. I think...
Not much else I can say, except that we've remained good friends and exchanged Christmas messages and all that. And I see him when I go to Oxford.
Could we go back a little bit and start over again? You were saying that you wish you had talked about...
I wished, as I'd mentioned, Dayton as a prominent chemist in another country with whom I've remained friends for a long time, without having ever collaborated, although I was very interested in his earlier Palmer work, and he in mine, I think, when he was a professor at Leeds and so on.
And what happened to him afterwards?
He became vice chancellor in the University of Nottingham.
Okay, right.
And then he went to London to be chairman of Science Research Council and then of the University Grants Committee, which I guess he was knighted at some stage. And then he went back to Oxford as the Dr. Lee's professor of physical chemistry, successor directly to Hinshelwood, I think.
Right.
But after a few years of that, he decided that scientific statesmanship was really more fun than running a research lab, so he resigned that chair, was succeeded by my friend John Rawlinson, also a friend with whom I've climbed in the Alps quite a lot.
Right.
And Rawlinson did a little polymer work when young, so our interests crossed there for a while, too.
Well, he taught me, of course. John Rawlinson was my professor of physical chemistry.
Sure, right. Well, have you gotten the recent blurb of the 50 years of the laboratory?
No, I haven't, actually, no.
Heavens, what a terrible thing. Well, you should find it when you get home. It was written... Danby wrote some of it, and who was the other person around there for a long time? Barrow? They put together this history of the lab from 1939
That'd be interesting.
Whatever.
Okay, well, I know John
Wilfenden is quite prominent at the beginning of it, too.
Well, I know John Wilfenden quite well because his son, Paul, did the history of science at the same time as I did.
Oh, sure, of course, yes.
I got to know him. And also, I got to know him through the Alembic Club, because when the Alembic Club had speakers, John Wilfenden always used to invite us to his office to have cherry with the
people. Lovely, good, yes.
I got to know him quite well through that. So, yes, okay, sure. I'll write to him and ask him.